J1.
Number 10A.
Now, in our work with the synonymous terms, I feel when we keep going over these ideas which characterize these terms that I repeat myself and I repeat myself and I repeat myself, but I feel that this is the methodology of studying, that one just goes over and over and over again the sequence, like from mind to spirit and from mind to spirit, and we keep going over it until these ideas, as we flow from mind into spirit, and the ideas which characterize spirit just become warm to us, they become natural to our consciousness. So actually we just drill and drill and drill. It's drilling work. It's sometimes as interesting as a mathematics class, you know, where one just keeps saying one and one is two and one and one is two and then two and two is four. You know, sometimes you feel that we're drill, drill, drill. But this is how the ideas finally become warm. They finally become very natural. So repetition is a necessity in this particular study, and especially as we go over these ideas. So let's go on now with purity. And let's see what purity means as an idea which characterizes reality. And again, and again, and again, spirit as a super symbol is teaching that divine ideas are separate from false physical beliefs. Divine ideas are diametrically opposed to false physical beliefs. Divine ideas do not mix with false physical beliefs. Therefore, divine ideas are pure. Now, what does it mean to be pure? The dictionary tells us that to be pure, the word pure means to separate from all extraneous matter. It means unmixed. It means faultless. Pure means free from foreign elements. Therefore, divine ideas are pure. Divine ideas do not mix with false beliefs. Divine ideas are pure. So, from a very practical standpoint, we can say if we desire to understand the science of being, if we desire to live our true spiritual identity, if we desire to live a pure, harmonious life, then we must always keep our thought in the realm of pure ideas. Therefore, spiritual goals cannot be attained through physical and material ways. It's only spiritual ways that can attain spiritual goals. So therefore, also, our aim should not be to try to improve the physical way of life by spiritual means. Our aim should not try to be comfortable in the physical beliefs. And we say, why? Why? It could be very nice maybe to be comfortable in physical ways and physical beliefs and false beliefs or what have you. It might be just very nice. Why not try to use some spiritual ideas to make things a little more harmonious in a false situation? Well, the thing is, as we have seen, is that it will never work. We will never, ever be comfortable in false beliefs. And the reason is that we cannot be comfortable in false beliefs is that it is mind's law that only divine ideas will evolve and physical false beliefs are annihilated. And eventually, the rug is pulled out from under us. So in order to try to make a false situation more comfortable and in some way, you know, try to sneak around this way and then we sneak around this way and we always try to keep the situation going, it'll never work. It never will. Just let it go. So we can see if we are seeking then comfort, if we're seeking a harmonious life, if we're seeking for our true identity, we must drop the first degree of awareness. And we must constantly keep our consciousness in that third degree of divine ideas. You can see, in this way, if we're constantly in search of the science of being and we constantly keep our consciousness in the rhythm of what science teaches us, then we can see that all our thoughts, our motives, our aims, our relationships, our desires, our whole life will be pure and it will be harmonious. In Science and Health, we read, "To discern the rhythm of spirit and to be holy, thought must be purely spiritual." And this is a tone which we will be seeing more and more with spirit, and that is pure. The whole accent and tone of spirit is purity. It's on pure thinking, pure motives, pure thoughts, pure desires. You see, can we see that? Because spirit is talking about separation, warfare, leavening, birth. It's saying that our lives, in order to be harmonious, must be pure. That we must hold our thought in the realm of divine ideas. Now we come to then baptism as an idea which characterizes spirit. Now baptism, as we know, is a biblical term which signifies a purification process. And in the Glossary of Science and Health, Mary Baker Eddy defines baptism in this way. She says, "Baptism means the purification by spirit, submergence in spirit." She also defines baptism by quoting from 2 Corinthians. She quotes, "We are willing rather to be absent from the body and to be present from the Lord." So, Mrs. Eddy describes this purification process or this baptism as submergence in spirit. Now, what does it mean to be submerged in spirit? It means that we must then constantly keep our consciousness flowing in the rhythm of divine ideas. Therefore, we must always have our sphere of awareness going out from perfection, going out from reality, and letting go of illusion. And in biblical language, to be pure means to be absent from the body. So we just say to be pure means to be absent from the first degree. Or in biblical language, to be pure means to be present with the Lord. So we just say that to be pure means to be present in the third degree of divine ideas. In Science and Health, we read, "The baptism of spirit washes the body of all the impurities of flesh, signifies that the pure in heart see God and are approaching spiritual life and its demonstration." Now, it's really very interesting to note that this definition of baptism also mentions and also more or less helps explain this spiritual meaning of burial. And this was something which, when I first came into the awareness of what burial meant, it was really quite a happy thing. Because Mrs. Eddy states in Science and Health, she defines burial as corporeality and physical sense put out of sight and hearing, annihilation, and burial as meaning submergence in spirit, immortality brought to light. So you see, burial just means that we bury all our first degree corporeal beliefs and we are therefore submerged in the third degree of divine idea. It's quite a spiritual concept of burial, to be just submerged in spiritual reality. Now, we go on and we see another idea which characterizes spirit is worship. Now, we have here quite a few biblical terms which are being used here to characterize spirit, but we can see these always in new modern terminology. Now, what does it mean to worship? Now, worship then is just a biblical term, but it means when our consciousness is totally submerged in the rhythm of spiritual ideas, then our consciousness is focused on spiritual reality. So we can say focus is another word for worship. When our consciousness is focusing on spiritual ideas, then that is worshiping in the old biblical term. And it's interesting. There was an art book published a while back called Centering, and it was written by a potter. And this particular artist who was in the field of ceramics, and you know in ceramics one works on a potter's wheel, and the big idea is to be able to center that pot on the wheel, you see, just get the pot centered, the clay centered right on the wheel, and then be able to form that particular vessel as you're working on the potter's wheel. The idea is perfect centering. So this particular artist used the concept of centering on the potter's wheel as a philosophical background for a book, and therefore goes into a beautiful dissertation about how one centers their life. But see, centering is just the new word for worship that the Bible used, you see, or focus. Always focusing ourself on ideals, on high ideals, focusing, you see, on them. So again, the whole tone of spirit is purity. And we see then that the ideas which mind creates, those ideas when we're looking out from the divine mind, all those creative ideas which pour forth in our consciousness that come into our awareness, we see that all those ideas when we're looking out from the divine mind, they're pure. They're pure ideas. They're only ideas that are going to evolve creatively. They're not mixed with physical beliefs or ideas or desires or gold, that all creative ideas will bless because they are pure, and they will see eventually reflect and incorporate all other ideas. So what we must see then is to worship, to center, to focus on just pure ideas. Now, it's interesting, again, we must see and see what the Bible says about some of these ideas. Now, we know that divine ideas then do not mix with false beliefs. In no way can we try to spiritualize materiality, nor in any way can we materialize spirit. We must see that they just can't work. One realm is totally separate from the other realm of living. Now, the Bible teaches certain things which are just very fundamental, and it teaches what we've been saying. The Bible teaches that the children of Israel tried to mix all of their material beliefs with divine ideas. But the Bible also teaches that it didn't work, because along comes Moses, who had to teach that the children of Israel should only worship God. Therefore, that he taught that the children of Israel should only focus on spiritual reality and stop trying to attain spiritual being and spiritual life through material ways. And in Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy says, the Israelites centered their thoughts on the material in their attempted worship of the spiritual. To them, matter was substance and spirit was shadow. They thought to worship spirit from a material standpoint, but this was impossible. Moses advanced a nation to the worship of God in spirit instead of in matter. Again, purity. Now we come to this idea of reflection. What does it mean to reflect? In the dictionary, we see that reflect means to give back an image or likeness of. Now, mind as a symbol, to drill again and to drill again. Mind as a symbol is teaching that the divine mind is the power that forms the image. Mind is a power that forms the image which we see. Therefore, that image which we see exists as an idea in mind. This is very basic stuff here. That mind forms the image, and the image that we see exists as an idea in mind. So spirit as a super symbol is just going to now talk about that image. Because mind as a symbol taught that the divine mind is a power that forms the image, spirit as a super symbol comes along to teach that that image, therefore, is pure. That image is pure and it's spiritual. That image is pure reflection. So, spirit as a super symbol teaches again that if we focus our thought on spiritual ideas, then we will experience pure reflection, we will experience pure image. But spirit also teaches as a super symbol, if we break away from pure ideas, from the realm of pure understanding, drop into false physical thinking, then we come into a distorted image and we come into a distorted reflection of reflection. Therefore, we get a distorted image of that perfect reflection. And this is why in Science and Health we read that delusion, sin, disease, and death arise from the false testimony of material sense, which, from a supposed standpoint outside the focal distance of infinite spirit, presents an inverted image of mind and substance with everything turned upside down. So, if we want to experience reality, we must look out from the divine mind. We will therefore see that pure image and we will experience pure reflection in a harmonious life. Now, when we say that the divine mind forms the image, we are just as well saying that divine mind creates ideas. Can we see that forms the image is saying exactly the same thing as creates ideas? Because ideas are the substance of that image. The divine mind forms the image we see is the same thing as saying divine mind creates ideas. So the image that we see is a divine idea. Now, spirit as a symbol teaches that these ideas that we see, this image that we see, is in constant reflection. It's in constant motion. It's never repeating itself. Therefore, as we look out, we see an image, we see ideas which never repeat themselves. So spirit as a symbol, which is looking at that image, is saying, okay, now those ideas never repeat themselves. Those ideas are diversified, those ideas are classified, and those ideas are individualized. Now, ideas are diversified. This means that ideas then never repeat themselves. They're always appearing in new forms, and they're always appearing in a variety of forms. Therefore, ideas are classified. All those diverse ideas are classified, and they're categorized. All ideas, all of the diverse ideas in being are classified, and they're categorized into their proper category. Not only are those ideas diversified, not only are they classified, but all those diverse ideas are distinct and individual. Therefore, each idea is individual. We can see then that Spirit is saying again that those ideas which are diversified, diverse, which are classified and individualized, that those ideas are always operating on a calculus. Those diverse ideas, even though they're in specific categories and they're all in an individual, unique expression of an idea, those ideas are infinitely reflecting every other idea. This means that every idea is always combining and reflecting every other idea. And this is where Mrs. Eddy talks about the infinite calculus of spirit. She means that all ideas are constantly reflecting every other idea. Now, we can more or less see this as a practical example if we look at what we call man. I mean, now, we say that mind forms the image. Now, we can just sit right here in our particular seat, and let's just look out. Now, as we look out, what do we see? I'm saying that mind forms the image. Now, as we look out into the room, we say, okay, now the predominant image I see is man. I see man. Now, that man, that the idea man, we look into this room and we see the idea man. And we know that the idea man exists as a fact in mind. So, as we look out into the room, we see the idea man. But don't we see the idea man in a variety of forms? Even though we see the idea man, this man is in diverse forms. He appears in a variety of forms. We have the idea man in a diverse variety of forms. Now, not only is their idea man diversified, but the idea man is also classified. We see that the idea man then appears in different categories. One is artist, one is musician, one is a certain type of businessman. The idea man, he's diversified, but he's also classified into certain categories. Therefore, the idea man we see in the room is individual. He's unique. So man just exists as an idea, but man is diversified. All those ideas must always be diversified. Ideas must be classified, and they must be individual and unique. But we also see that as individual man, or from the idea man, that we must interrelate, we must always integrate and recombine and reflect each other, because no man stands alone. Each man is always in an infinite relationship with every other man, you see. We always are coming in contact with people in infinite relationships and different combinations. So we must always reflect each other infinitely. And this is how it is in reality, you see, always with ideas, whatever ideas are. Any idea, an idea always comes forth in its diverse nature. It always shows forth its many forms. But an idea always is in its proper category, and it's also a very unique individual idea. But this unique individual idea must reflect every other idea. And therefore, in the world, we begin to see the talk of structure and wholeness, that every idea reflects every other idea in a real structure, and that no man stands alone. And I remember in high school, I used to have to sing that song in junior choir that said, "No man is an island." You know, no man stands alone. Well, it's so true. No man is an island. We cannot say to people, "Bug out of my life. Let me live my life as I want to live it. I have nothing to do with you. You have nothing to do with me." It doesn't work, because we all reflect every other idea, and we can't help it. We influence and we affect each other. We're in an infinite calculus of ideas. Therefore, it's so important for the world to see structure and to see that one person can't cop out, so to speak. If one person doesn't stand up to his pure reflection, if one person is off on first-degree false belief, he makes that whole structure break down. So we must see that when we look out into the future of structural being, that each idea must reflect every other idea. No person can go, so to speak, on a separate ego trip, feeling that he is separate from the rest, better from the rest. Every idea is reflecting every other idea on equal ways, yet man is unique. Each of those ideas fulfills his specific role. Therefore, there's no competition, no jealousy, none of these false physical beliefs of the first degree that comes in, because every man's unique. He has a specific role. He feels fulfillment. He experiences fulfillment and not stepping on another man. It's not, so to speak, the whole question of that book which said, "What makes Sammy run?" I don't know if any of you have read "What Makes Sammy Run," but Sammy stepped on everybody's toes in order to get up to the top. He just stepped and squashed and squished, and Sammy finally made it, you know, to the top. Well, this isn't reality. Reality talks about structure, and everyone must interrelate in that structure, and nobody can cop out, so to speak. So it's so important for each one to claim their divine identity in a pure way, you see, so reflection can be purely spiritual. Now we come, therefore, to another idea which characterizes spirit, and that is one of likeness. Now, the divine mind forms the image, and that image is a likeness of the divine mind. And as we have seen, that it's a law of order, that like must produce like. So what the divine mind brings forth, it must be like itself. We go on to good as an idea which characterizes spirit, or characterizes an idea which is a fact in reality, and we find good. Well, divine mind creates ideas, and these ideas are pure and good. That means that ideas are not evil. They aren't in the realm of false belief. Mrs. Eddy defines good as God, spirit, omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniaction. Now, God, good, spirit, You can equate them. You can say good means God or spirit. Therefore, to be, do good doesn't mean that one, on a human, morally point of view, does a real nice, good little human deed for the next person. This is fine. That's good. But the real meaning, the highest sense of good, means that we must be totally submerged in the whole realm of divine ideas. Our whole consciousness must be at work in the pure realm of being, and we must live and stay and work in this particular location. That is doing good. When we are always looking out from divine ideas, that's the highest good we can do. Then we're being good God, so to speak, or the divine mind in action. Now we come to substance. Now this one of substance, one feels that it is perhaps often a keynote of the synonymous term spirit, that substance is the main idea which characterizes spirit. Well, it's true. Let's see. That substance is very important because we see that spirit is a super symbol. It's talking about that image, and we want to know what is the substance of that image. We have already seen that that image is pure, and that image is in reflection, and that image is diversified, classified, individualized. It's in infinite reflection. Now, what is the real substance of that image that we see? Now, substance means, in a dictionary way, that which underlies all outward manifestation. It means the real, unchanging essence or nature of a thing. Substance means that of which a thing consists or is made up. So, that image which mind forms exists as an idea in mind. That image which we see is an idea in mind. Therefore, the real substance of the image we see is idea.